Does the manipulation of voting districts for the purpose of favoring one political party over another, does that go so far that it denies the constitutional rights of voters? And if it does, can the courts reasonably referee this partisan bias issue? That right there, in a nutshell, is what is before the U.S. Supreme Court as the justices heard oral arguments yesterday. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is there covering this case at the Supreme Court. Sean, good morning. Sean, are you there? And we're having some technical difficulty getting Sean Johnson, who is at the Supreme Court. He covered oral arguments yesterday looking at the case coming from Wisconsin. What are you watching for as the Supreme Court considers the case? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. What questions do you have about Gill versus Whitford? And what has interested you in the case? Are particular justices that you are watching here? What will happen as the Supreme Court looks at this case, Gill versus Whitford, about redistricting? 800-642-1234. We're trying to get our own Sean Johnson here on the line, who is in Washington, D.C., covering the oral arguments that we heard yesterday. And we had 1 hour, the justices had 1 hour to discuss the case. The High Court heard the oral arguments yesterday, testing whether extreme partisan gerrymandering is unconstitutional. This case rising out of Wisconsin has the potential to radically change elections in our country. And the legal question before the U.S. Supreme Court is whether such partisanship in gerrymandering can run so extreme that it becomes unconstitutional. So what do you think? 800-642-1234. We'd like callers to weigh in here as we get our own Sean Johnson here on the phone. We're having a little bit of technical issues. Is it okay to drop voting districts to give lopsided advantages to the party in power? What do you think about this case as it moves forward? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now, I think we have you, Sean Johnson. Are you there?
Hi, Kate. Sorry about that.
Hi.
Technical difficulty.
Woo. All right. Well, tell us, what about those oral arguments yesterday? Give us an overview.
I heard your nutshell of the case there. It's a pretty good one. I mean, this case really does boil down to, can the Supreme Court get involved in cases like these? And, you know, if so, where does it draw that line? When is a map too partisan? Because in the past, the Supreme Court and courts in general have struck down maps for a variety of reasons, but never before because it was too much of a partisan gerrymander. That is, you know, it gave one party who drew the maps too much of an electoral advantage over the other party. Because, you know, in Wisconsin, for example, Republicans, by choosing district lines, get to choose their voters, get to choose the layout of electoral contests for the next decade. And so, you know, leading into yesterday, it's despite the volumes upon volumes of legal briefs in this case and all the importance that, you know, is, you know, tucked into that, there was an hour to hear from attorneys, but really to hear from justices for any kind of hint as to where they stood on this case.
Did we get any hints?
I'd say you had from the four justices on the court who were nominated by Democratic presidents some pretty strong hints that they are open to striking down Wisconsin's legislative map and to having the court take up partisan gerrymandering claims in the future. They think that the social science, that the political science around measuring, you know, gerrymandering and when maps are too partisan is pretty developed now. It's pretty approachable. It's pretty accurate. And they think that the court can use that to measure these kinds of cases in the future. And then on the other side, you had three of the justices who were appointed by Republican presidents send some pretty strong hints that they don't want to go here, that they don't think that a bright line has been drawn in this case that the court could use as a metric for future cases to say, here's when a partisan map becomes too partisan, and don't do that.
So give us a sense of where Justice Kennedy, because all eyes were on Justice Kennedy yesterday, what came from Justice Kennedy?
Yeah, Justice Kennedy was the first justice to speak during arguments. So, the way these things go, the attorneys in the cases get up to say their piece. They start to speak and they get cut off by the justices, typically. Kennedy probably cut off the Wisconsin Department of Justice Solicitor General in less than a minute, is my recollection of it. And he wanted to know about standing in this case. That is to say, he went to know, his questions were about the difference in whether this case was brought as a First Amendment case, violation of free speech or free association, or a 14th Amendment case, an equal protection case.
Oh, okay.
What you can read into that, I'm not sure. At least for me, it was hard to look at Kennedy and read the tea leaves as to where he's at. There may have been attorneys watching that case and thought, oh, okay, we know where Kennedy's at now, but he asked a few questions about standing and kind of left it at that. He didn't get into this idea of whether or not there was, the metric that they had developed in this case, in the Wisconsin case, was a good one. He didn't delve into that at all. It was all about standing for Kennedy. And so after arguments, we kind of were where we were before arguments. Four justices on the left that we think are probably going to vote to strike down Wisconsin's map. Four on the right who probably are going to vote to uphold it, if we were going to read the tea leaves based on what they said or didn't say. And then Justice Kennedy in the middle, where we're not quite sure what he's thinking right now.
All right. Taking tallies here, we're with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who's in Washington covering the high court's oral arguments yesterday, testing Wisconsin's case, a gerrymandering case, whether there is extreme partisan gerrymandering or not. Case rising out of Wisconsin that could have implications for elections all over the country. 800-642-1234. If you'd like to weigh in here on the conversation, what do you think about this gerrymandering case from Wisconsin? What side would you take? 800-642-1234. Sean, you reported that Chief Justice John Roberts, along with Justices Samuel Alito and Neil Gorsuch, expressed skepticism that the Supreme Court could intervene in a process that is so inherently political. Can you tell us more about that conversation?
Yeah, I think one of the most memorable exchanges, you could say speeches, really, came from John Roberts. And it was couched in the form of, a question, but really Roberts expressed what was to him a big concern with this case. He said, quote, "I would think if this claim is allowed to proceed, there will naturally be a lot of these claims raised around the country." He went on to say, "And every one of them will come here for a decision on the merits." And Roberts goes on and says, "And if you're an intelligent man on the street and the court issues the decision, and let's say the Democrats win, and that person will say, well, why did the Democrats win? And the answer is going to be because the efficiency gap was greater than 7%, when the efficiency gap is the sigma of party X wasted votes minus the sigma of party Y wasted votes over the sigma of party X votes plus party Y votes. And the intelligent man on the street is going to say that's a bunch of baloney. It must be because the Supreme Court preferred the Democrats over the Republicans." Mm. Roberts said that's going to cause very serious harm to the status and integrity of the decisions of the court in the eyes of the country. He was pretty blunt there, I think, a lot of people thought, in expressing his concerns in the case. And, it could be that he was just talking in hypotheticals, and, that's a concern for him, but that's not the way that he would ultimately rule. But it seemed like a pretty strong hint there from the Chief Justice that he would rather not have the courts get involved in deciding disputes like these that are inherently political, especially if there's not kind of that bright line test to say when they become too political.
We're talking right now with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who is in Washington, filling us in where he watched the oral arguments unfold yesterday. 1 hour of heated debate. You can join in 800-642-1234. What are you watching for as the Supreme Court considers this case? What do you think the ruling should be and why? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this news from NPR and WPR here on the Ideas Network. Is it okay to draw up voting districts to give lopsided advantages to the party in power? Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Morning Show. The Supreme Court justices appear to be split about whether they could find a standard, a litmus test, if you will, for determining when gerrymandered district drawing has crossed a line. What is that line? WPR's Sean Johnson stays with us. He's there in D.C. covering the case at the Supreme Court. Ask your question at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go right to the phones, full phone lines. Marcelo in New Lima. Hi, Marcelo.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's a comment that this case is another indicator that the electoral system in general is antiquated. In the last election, the person that got the most individual votes lost the contest, and that's my comment, that the system itself is antiquated and needs to be changed. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air comment. Thank you.
And Marcelo, reminds me of something, I think it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg said yesterday about the precious vote. Remind me?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. That was Justice Ginsburg, who is one of the court's, you know, Democratic nominees, chimed in during arguments to say she wanted to ask what's really behind all this, said, quote, "the precious right to vote. If you can stack a legislature in this way, what incentive is there for a voter to exercise his vote? Whether it's a Democratic district or a Republican district, the result, using this map, the result is preordained in most of the district. Isn't that," Ginsburg goes on to say, "what becomes of the precious right to vote? Would we have that result when the individual citizen says, I have no choice, I'm in this district, and we know how this district is going to come out?" Ginsburg says, quote, "I think that's something that this society should be concerned about." That's not a question there at the end. That's a statement from Justice Ginsburg about her concerns with, you know, with the map.
And we certainly saw concerns outside the courthouse. What was going on outside, Sean?
Outside, you had a rally from people who want to overturn Wisconsin's map and want other maps to be challenged around the country. Among the speakers was Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, as California's governor, was a big advocate for creating a nonpartisan redistricting commission there. So not somebody you see every day at a political rally if you're not from California. You also had attorneys from the cases kind of giving their takes on what they thought about Justice Roberts' comments. And so a couple of the attorneys there, you had Misha Saitlin, the Department of Justice Solicitor General, was asked, you know, what about this contention by Justice Roberts that if the court strikes down Wisconsin maps, it will lead to an influx of similar lawsuits in the future
and
damage
the
reputation of the court?
I think we have that clip. Let's take a listen.
I think it's unquestionable that the court would be inundated in cases, and I think it's a particular institutional concern for the Supreme Court because, unlike in most areas, you get direct appeals to the U.S. Supreme Court. So they couldn't just deny cert. They'd have to take every single one. And, of course, we all know there's always going to be an allegation of partisanship, and every one of those cases would go to trial and would get appealed directly up here. And I don't think that the Chief Justice wanted that kind of world. But again, there are other arguments, and we'll see what happens.
Well, is it a new world, though, Sean?
And that's sort of the argument, is that these gerrymanders that you see now are, I think the phrase was used, not your father's gerrymander. That they're not just based on, oh, hey, I know there's a neighborhood over here that I want in my district, and you know, I want to carve this one out. You know, a legislator kind of using their knowledge of the district to nip and tuck and create oddly shaped districts. The shape of these districts is sort of irrelevant now. It's all based on very refined math. And so these gerrymanders are getting more effective. And so that's kind of the argument, is that things have changed and that the court needs to step in.
Let's take
so Paul Smith.
Yeah, we have a full phone lines here. And I just want Jeremy in Racine to jump in here. Jeremy, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm against gerrymandering, and I hope they do shoot down the maps in Wisconsin. But the question I have for people in Wisconsin and the politicians, what mechanisms or proposals do we have in place that will fix this problem? Or are we just going to have to keep revisiting this very same case every 10 years after it's been?
After the census, Jeremy said, every 10 years, will this come up?
I think, you know, there are other ways that you know, people can go at the way districts' lines are drawn, that changes can be made. You know, there are proposals typically in the Wisconsin legislature from Democrats, at least since they've been in the minority, to create a nonpartisan redistricting process along the lines of what you see in Iowa. So to detach it at least a bit from the legislature so that the people who benefit from the map aren't drawing it. That is something that gets thrown out there. It's not something that's gained traction in Wisconsin. It's not something that Democrats passed during their brief stint in the majority here several years ago. So that's one avenue, is the legislature could do it. There's no, in Wisconsin, there's no citizen-driven redistricting process like they have in other states. You know, so you can't put something on the ballot here as citizens and say, we want a change to the way maps are drawn. And so that's why there's all this focus on the courts, because practically speaking, for Democrats, it's their best shot to get something changed. This is something the Supreme Court hinted, Justice Kennedy hinted in 2004, he was open to looking at. And so here we are. I mean, this is
over
this
a
is
decade later,
kind of the next best look for the court at this thorny issue. And they're really landed on pretty thick on Justice Kennedy, saying, look, now is your shot to do this. There's rumors that Justice Kennedy may be considering retirement in the near future, and that this could be, you don't know what's going on inside his head, but that he could view this as a legacy case. He knows this is a serious issue. Perhaps he wants to get involved.
Well, let's bring in Charlie Jacobs now. He's an associate professor of judicial process and American politics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what were your takeaways from oral arguments yesterday?
I think there were some interesting issues raised by the justices that signal some behaviors that we've seen from them in the past, as well as Sean was noting, you know, this real emphasis on what Kennedy was thinking, what kinds of questions he might be asking. I think for me, one of the things that stood out was Justice Roberts' sort of offhanded remark about social science statistics being gobbledygook. And this is, you know, this is an issue that the court has had to grapple with for a long time. They are experts in the law, and sometimes they are well in over their heads when it comes to the statistics that are offered. There's a very famous case from 1987 called McCleskey versus Kemp, and it had to do with disparities in the application of the death penalty, where blacks who killed whites were much more likely to get the death penalty. And at the time, the court just basically said, well, we don't believe the statistics. And that seems to be, in many ways, what Roberts is saying. I don't really believe the statistics. I don't understand the statistics. And so it's problematic for our ability to come up with a reasonable solution. That's scary, not just in this case, but it's kind of scary about the unwillingness of the court to dive in and try to figure out these complex problems. We're in a world where it's just getting more and more driven by big data. And if the court's unwilling to do this, it might have real impacts on issues of justice and application of rights in the United States.
And Charlie, walk us through the efficiency gap and the role it plays in this case.
The efficiency gap is a standard that was created by a law professor down at University of Chicago by the name of Nicholas Stephanopoulos. And in essence, what it tries to do is measure the existence of wasted votes in districts that have been drawn by legislatures. So what you're trying to determine is how many wasted votes exist that were unnecessary for the candidate that won to capture the seat. And if that measurement is really high, then the indication is that there was real demonstrable gerrymandering that was unfair to one party to favor the other. And the measurement is on a scale, and if you hit about 7, the argument is that there is significant and real gerrymandering that hurts the minority party. What the scholars have noted is Wisconsin's is the worst they've ever seen in modern American history, that it was so obvious and purposeful, at least according to their empirical metric, that it should be considered a problem. And the reason that this measure is important in the argument is that, as Sean was pointing out, in this case in 2004 out of Pennsylvania, Kennedy basically said, we don't have a standard. Give us a standard. This could be the standard that flips him to argue that the court is a place that you can resolve these kinds of issues about whether or not gerrymandering went too far.
How typically has the Supreme Court acted when it comes to social science and data methods?
Well, it's funny. I'm actually going to refer to a case that has to do with administrative law. It's a very famous case from the 1980s called a Chevron case. And it was funny because it had to do with a very technical issue. And in essence, what the court said was we don't understand these technical issues, so we're going to punt it back to the administrative agencies where there are experts. And in a lot of cases, that's what the court does. There was a case a few years ago where poor Justice Breyer tried to wade in on a discussion about statistical methods, and he just kind of went around in circles and then gave up because they don't have the capacity because that's not what they were trained in. It's not that they're not bright people. They don't do it every day. And so I think they've been very hesitant to believe statistics, that for some reason what they want to see is individual facts regarding the case as it applies to their precedent and law, and they'll apply those. But generalized hypotheses and conclusions worry them because it abstracts the individual issues that apply to rights in the law. And so I think it makes them really nervous, and as a result, they'd rather punt and not deal with them.
Talking right now to Charlie Jacobs. He's a political scientist out of St. Norbert College. Sean Johnson also on the phone. He's WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. Let's now go to Tom in Oshkosh. Go ahead, Tom. Tom, are you there?
I am.
All right, go ahead.
My question is, what is the backstory or history of the judicial branch not taking up gerrymandering at all and needing some sort of metric to measure when it's okay or not okay? Why would this have ever been considered a reasonable way to decide districts? I mean, why not follow governmental boundaries, or what was happening at the roots of gerrymandering that made this now the standard by which we even have this discussion?
Charlie?
Well, I think there are two separate questions there, Tom, so let me see if I can answer them both for you. Why the court won't take these issues? They have in the past regarded these kinds of questions, and it has to do with political gerrymandering, that is, gerrymandering based upon differences in partisanship and political party affiliation. They haven't taken them based upon a doctrine called the political question doctrine, which is there are some questions that aren't, in essence, legal questions that they can decide. They are actually a political question, one that is vested in political entities like legislatures. And they don't want to weigh in because, as Justice Roberts said yesterday, we don't want to take sides. But the other issue is what's our yardstick to measure this? How many is too many Democrats in a district or too few Republicans in a district? How do you measure that? And so their argument is, we can't decide, so we'll let the branches continue to decide those kinds of issues. Why is this sort of an entrenched process? In part because it started very early in our history as a method by which we're going to apportion these seats among the states, and the states are going to apportion districts within their own state boundaries. And it just kind of ossified over time. It's the method, and it was vested in state legislatures because it seemed the appropriate institution to make these kinds of decisions. It's been very rare to see states say, we're going to take it out of the hands of politicians and put it in nonpartisan commissions, like in California or in Iowa or in Arizona. And part of that is because once you give the political parties the power to draw lines that will advantage them, why would they ever give them up again? And so it's really hard to wrest that kind of power away from the parties.
So, and follow up on Tom there, why, what have we seen out of those states that have taken the politics more or less out of it? Has it made a difference?
Yeah, I haven't seen any studies that, that sort of empirically say whether it has, but I think that the public in general finds, I mean, most of the public opinion polls I've seen, there's more confidence in the system, that at least they feel as though both parties have a fighting chance in most districts.
Oh, they feel like their vote matters.
Right. They feel as though they have a different kind of confidence in the system. They know it's not going to be perfect. They know that no one is going to shed all of their biases when they walk into one of these committees, but at least there's a balanced approach to trying to figure this out. And, I mean, I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, they sort of talked about technology yesterday in the court and the issues of the application of computer programs and data. You know, there have been scholars since at least the 1990s who have been running statistical programs that take criteria established by the Supreme Court, things like compactness, contiguity, all these kinds of issues about what a district should look like. They throw it into a computer, and they can generate tens of thousands of random districts based upon Supreme Court criteria. We've been able to do this for 25 years. We just haven't done it. We wouldn't even need human beings other than to program the computer, and it could spit out a bunch of random districts, and we could pick among them. That would be the easiest possible solution.
Let's quickly, on that note, go to John in Milwaukee, who wants to say something about technology.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's my thought that technology can cause this, that they, you know, Republicans use technology to gerrymander the districts. And I just heard the end of the speaker as far as the computers. And it's been my thought, if we started in the southeast part of the state and let a computer spread throughout the state, you know, a mile west and a mile north, and continue until however many miles west and north draws a population equal to the percentage needed for a district, then stops and starts again a mile west and a mile north until it reaches a population density, there would be no intervention based on politics. It would just be the population of our area, and it would be something that does not have a bend, either Democratic or Republican.
And Charlie, very quickly here, as we are up against a break, how would you respond?
I mean, John's right. Keeping in mind that, again, the court has defined certain criteria. So they want to keep counties or cities together. They want to try to follow natural boundaries like rivers or edges of states. So there are things that you try to do to make these districts rational. But he's right. Computers can manage these kind of data and variables quite easily and make districts that don't take, as he say, any human intervention whatsoever outside of programming the computer.
And we're talking right now with Charlie Jacobs. He is a political scientist at St. Norbert College. Also on the line, Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief. Add your thoughts, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Gill versus Whitford? Back after these news headlines from NPR. We're continuing our conversation about Gill versus Whitford, which is before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We have with us Sean Johnson and Charlie Jacobs helping us unpack this case. Sean is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief. Charlie is an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Sean, back to you. You heard from an attorney yesterday for the plaintiffs, Paul Smith, who had a response to something Justice Roberts said, and I want you to be able to set it up for us.
Yeah, this was on the courthouse steps outside of the U.S. Supreme Court after arguments. And Paul Smith, the attorney for the Democratic plaintiffs bringing this case, was asked about, you know, what about Justice Roberts' comments where Roberts said his concern with the court getting involved in cases like Wisconsin's is that, you know, there's going to be a bunch of these cases coming up to the court then. And even if justices use social science metrics to make their decisions, the average person on the street's going to see them as siding with Democrats and Republicans, and that's going to damage the reputation of the court. So here is attorney Paul Smith reacting to those comments from Justice Roberts.
I really understand where the Chief Justice is coming from in trying to protect the court's reputation as a nonpartisan institution. But it has to make a choice. If it wants to protect that reputation by ducking this issue, it's the only institution that can fix the problem. The politicians aren't going to fix the problem. The voters can't get it on the ballot in a place like Wisconsin. And so if the court takes a pass, then we're going to be stuck with an anti-democratic situation in lots and lots of states, basically the form of democracy without the substance of democracy.
So are we at a critical juncture here in our election system, Sean?
I mean, it's definitely a critical juncture, regardless of how you view this issue. The fact that it's taken so long to get up to the court since the last time the court kind of grappled with partisan gerrymandering claims just shows you that it would be probably another decade, if not longer, before the court revisited the issue. Depending on the composition of the court, you know, it could be longer. You know, there's a lot of unknowns in that, but it could be generations. So this is gerrymandering and partisan gerrymandering because it's become sophisticated. Those gerrymanders have become more and more effective, plaintiffs say. And, you know, they're saying to Justice Kennedy, really, in particular, if you want to do something about this, now is the time. You know, and you did hear the justices on the court who were appointed by Democratic presidents say in many different ways, we can do this. Justice Breyer proposed his own, you know, 3-to-4-part test from the bench, basically just threw it out there, said, I think this seems manageable. You heard Justice Kagan say, if politicians can use these metrics to decide, you know, which maps are going to entrench them in power, why can't we use those metrics to evaluate what they're doing? And then Justice Sotomayor saying, look, I understand that offense is trying to poke holes in all these metrics, but every single social science metric points in the same direction, and that is that Republicans chose in Wisconsin the most partisan map among many other choices. So they say Wisconsin's a clear-cut case that they could use to kind of build upon as they consider partisan gerrymandering lawsuits in the future.
Let's take another call now. Carol, go ahead, in Milwaukee. Hi, Carol.
Hello. I have an idea for a simple solution, one that the judges would not think is too statistical, and that is that a bright line could be drawn using past records of how many votes were Republican and how many were Democrat in the districts by saying that no more than maybe 40-60% could be Democrat or whatever percentage they want to put on it, 30-70% Democrat, Republican, and say that there could be no more than that within, that could be their red line that they would draw, and it would be very simple, and that would be too much partisanship if it was beyond that amount.
Charlie Jacobs?
If there were a nice dispersion in every state and within every state of Democrats and Republicans, it would be an elegant solution. But the problem is the concentration of Republicans and Democrats in some states in different areas, which, if we use that kind of approach, would mean we'd have these serpentine districts that were kind of crawling all over the state to try to capture enough Republicans and Democrats in order to make up these kinds of districts. And then you think about these states that are overwhelmingly red or overwhelmingly blue. It's hard to find opponents. It's hard to find members of the opposite party to be able to place in a district that doesn't look like it's overwhelmingly partisan. So there are so many variables that impact the way in which we look at this. It's in states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin where that kind of solution would likely work better, but in other states it would just kind of collapse under the weight of one-party rule.
Well, Carol, thanks for calling in with that idea. Let's go to Russell in Beaver Dam. Go ahead, Russell.
Yes, this is democracy stolen, and welcome to the United States of an oligarchy. Justice Roberts, afraid it may appear favoring the Democrats, what happened to the rule of law, no matter where it takes us? This is a direct result of our country being awash in political bribery by the 1%, and thank you.
Sean Johnson, go ahead.
So I guess to just in fairness to Justice Roberts, not that he needs somebody to defend him exactly, but he said that, you know, the court would be seen as siding with Republicans or Democrats, the Republicans or the Democrats in these cases. Of course, John Roberts was appointed by a Republican and, you know, is certainly going to side with Republican interest in most decisions. We don't know what he's going to do here. It was a pretty strong signal from him. Justice Gorsuch, the most recent nominee to the Supreme Court by President Trump, sent his own signals, said that, you know, that he compared this mix of social science metrics that the plaintiffs are talking about, the efficiency gap and others, as kind of a spice rub was his comparison. Nobody quite knows the recipe. A little of this, a little of that. And that's not specific enough for the court.
Let's go to Jeff now in Burlington. Go ahead, Jeff.
Good morning, folks. Thank you for a very interesting program.
You bet. Go ahead.
It occurred to me as I was listening to you that I don't know why we even have districts. Why don't we elect representatives at large as we do senators?
Charlie Jacobs.
Well, it's complicated, but in part for congressional districts, there's a federal law that requires states to hack up their geography into single-member districts, and that's been around for 175-some-odd years. You'd be taxing me if you asked me to come up with the exact year at the moment. Again, primarily tradition. Single-member districts has been something we've used for quite a bit of time. We could certainly adopt a different kind of system, but again, because parties understand how this system works, how to game the system, whether you're Republican or Democrat, and that changing the system would likely shred the power that the parties have over retaining their ability to govern or at least win positions, they're reluctant to make changes, even if the public is wanting to pursue them. So it's a mix of history, tradition, and just power politics.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for that important question. Appreciate it. Charlie, take a look in your crystal ball here for a moment. What happens if the court, first of all, rules in favor of the challengers? What does that mean for Wisconsin? And then what happens on the flip side of that?
I suspect if they rule on behalf of those who brought this suit, I think it's kind of a coin flip. They could make the argument that because rights have been violated, that we can't wait. You must immediately alter the districts. But we're so close to the next census that they might kind of pull their punches and say, going forward, when these kinds of districts are drawn, you must take these kinds of considerations, under the microscope when you're drawing the districts. And so I really couldn't say with any confidence which way they would go. I mean, this is unlikely to come out until June. This is one of those hot potato cases that they sit on and they mull about for a long time. And so I don't think you're going to see it till June. I think it's too short of a window to redraw districts when we got an election coming up next year. So my suspicion is more likely than not they're going to hold it. I'm going to agree with Sean and some of the other individuals you've heard in quotes that he recorded yesterday. If Wisconsin wins, this is going to be an issue that's going to go on the back shelf and collect dust for a long time because there aren't going to be many reasons to bring it back up. The court will say, we've dealt with it, we've ruled, we have a doctrine we've developed, and they're not going to grant certiorari for this case for a long time.
You would see them just kind of moving on from it.
Yep, I really would, because I mean, if with the kinds of computing power and the kind of social science theories and practice that we've gotten in this case, if they won't accept that kind of information, and as some of the more liberal justices would suggest, try to support and retain democracy and ensure that we're protecting democratic theory, if they're not willing at this date, I'm not sure they're going to be in the near future. So it may be another decade or more since. Like with the last case that we had before we see it again.
Sean, as we wrap up, what's ahead for your coverage on this case?
A lot of waiting, probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the court's not going to rule until June, imagine the amount of speculative stories that we'll have to do about what they might or might not do. And, you know, one legal expert, one court watcher described it to me this way. He said, look, I not only think that Justice Kennedy is genuinely divided on this issue, that he sees it both ways, but you got to remember, like, how he views the issue today could actually change tomorrow. And as these opinions are being written over the next several months, his view on the issue could evolve. So trying to predict where he's going to go with this is, you know, probably a fool's errand. What it means though for Wisconsin is, when the court does issue its ruling, even if it rules in favor of the plaintiff, says this is a partisan gerrymander, you know, Charlie alluded to this, we don't know what that means for the 2018 elections. The courts could say, look, we don't want to disrupt those, it's too close to those, and we're going to leave the old map in place for these. If it did that, that would mean that the state senators who draw the next map would be elected under this one.
And I'm going to stop it there. Thank you so much. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College. Morning Show is produced by Brianne Shasso and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is Executive Producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.